Here we go on a Friday. Yes, coming around the end of the bend here. Let's open the door. Let's find out. Tom has been out the last 2 weeks. Will Mike Lewis make it back for the final day of the Tom and Kirby Show? Hey, Mike Lewis, let's sell these monkeys.
Yes, let's sell these monkeys.
Ah, a good mood.
Where does that come from?
Bob Bowersox from QVC. Just before we'd come on the air, he would turn to whoever he was about to sell stuff with, and he would say, let's sell these effing monkeys. And he'd like to time it.
That doesn't show a whole lot of respect for the people you're selling the
monkeys to.
The monkeys to.
Oh, Ursa, it's okay. We'll fix that in post. All right, here we go. EPA Chief Scott Pruitt. I liked him. He sued the... He was the Attorney General of Oklahoma. He did a couple of good things. Although I think he really got kind of caught up in the whole, hey, listen, why don't somebody run out and buy me some lotion?
Yeah, it was just the haters.
At one point, you guys are reading the National Review, and even at one point, the headline was, Scott Pruitt has got to go.
Right.
And they listed a couple of good things, but then they said, this is just awful. I mean, just... How completely tone deaf do you need to be? You get into that office and then you send your minions out to go get you a certain type of lotion, but not the lotion that's available anywhere, but only at certain Ritz-Carlton's. And not all Ritz-Carlton's have this lotion. Go get me the good lotion.
Go get me a used Trump hotel mattress? Well, what's that all about?
I don't know. And by the way, my wife...
She wants the Chick-fil-A.
Did you just buy her a Hallmark card store in a closing down strip mall somewhere in Oklahoma? No, you got to get her a Chick-fil-A.
The one common thread you see in all the Scott Pruitt stories is the reporter's disinclination to list every single thing he did. They always get to the point where too many to list here, and then they go on
from
that.
They do give you a link.
They do give you a link. So the one poor sap who had to enumerate everything Scott Pruitt. He was comically bad.
God, like yeah, if you were to make a Hollywood character.
Snidely Whiplash bad.
Right. If you made him into a Hollywood character at halfway through the movie, people are like, oh, come on.
That's not going to happen. No one would do that. The trip, I love the taxpayer-funded trip to Morocco, where the EPA literally does zero business. Absolutely none.
But didn't he also ask for like some type of military camouflage pants or something like that.
The $42,000 phone booth in his office.
Soundproof phone booth in his office.
He requested $100,000 a month contract for private corporate jets rather than flying commercial. And then when he did fly commercial, insisted on first class, which none of his predecessors had done.
Yeah,
because it was necessary for. But here's the thing about Scott Pruitt: the more sort of weirdly serious disconnect that he had. He was done in by the people he hired. And he was done in because they got unhappy with him. We're not talking about people who are not sympathetic to his desire to slash and burn every environmental protection regulation he could. They were actually undone by the fact that they found him too scummy to work with.
Yeah, well, they weren't. They were no. Most of those people who work in the EPA, they're bureaucrats, and most of
No. I'm talking about the high level people he appointed.
The rest of the people.
These are the ones
him.
Who Congress interviewed, and they all said, "We don't know what to do with the guy. He's forcing us to alter schedules, which is actually a federal crime."
Right. Yeah. Anyway, he's gone. I think maybe he wanted to get gone.
No.
He likes to be.
He wanted to be Attorney General. Remember that one?
Well, he'd rather have that job.
Yeah. True.
Okay, some woman named Kristen Mink confronted Pruitt. She had her baby. They were in a restaurant in D.C.
We deserve to have somebody at the EPA who actually does protect our environment, somebody who believes in climate change and takes it seriously for the benefit of all of us, including our children. So I would urge you to resign before your scandals push you out.
And she did it. And congratulations. He's like, you know what? That's a cute baby. You got a good point. I'll see you later.
First, of course, I was elated, jumping up and down, very excited. It's great. Then, of course, I saw who he's appointed as the interim, and that's reality for us, right?
Yeah.
It's a coal lobbyist. So, you know, it's not like we're going to get somebody with a better agenda. Maybe he'll be less corrupt. It would be hard to be more corrupt, of course.
But I think what it comes down to is this shows us that, you know, we need to flip Congress in the fall.
There you go. That's good. All righty. Out he goes.
Out he goes. And he is joined by now he is one of five cabinet members in the first 18 months who has resigned. And 32 administration officials, none of these numbers are even, there's no real mirror for any of these numbers. It's the most in more than 100 years, mm-hmm. as far as that many administration officials.
But you want fresh blood. You want new ideas.
Consistently. I mean, it's not, the swamp.
Fresh blood. Every 2 weeks, you want to turn these people every 2 weeks.
The swamp became kind of the lap pool, you know, at Mar-a-Lago. It's crazy.
All right, out Scott goes. But apparently, as a story that we didn't get to a couple days ago, is as Americans age, their support for the environment declines. Did you see this a couple days ago when we had this thing?
They did
a survey, and they found that when they're younger, everybody's like, oh, yeah, climate change or anything else. But as they get older, they asked a bunch of folks, I forget how old they were, do we think we're spending not enough, too much, just enough, or need to spend more when it comes to environmental issues? And most of the people that were surveyed that are in a certain demographic that are gray-haired were like, no, we got just enough. Don't need to do more. It seems to be okay. And even as people age into that group, they also seem to take on what would be considered, for those on the left that would like to have more involvement of the federal government in environmental issues, that they develop sort of an apathy, or they're not as just concerned about the environment in general as they get older.
But what also happens if you read the full study and you look at other similar studies, because this isn't really anything incredibly new, is that while they are much more sort of environmentally minded as young people and then, you know, become much less, much more, you know, self-focused as they get older.
Yeah, have you seen my yard?
worried much more about things like that. They do also find that the baseline has been getting raised. I talked years ago, I had a pretty interesting sit down with an environmental attorney, and I made some point about, you know, are environmental regulations actually getting stronger now than when you started in the law? He was in his 80s at that particular point, really bright guy. And he said, you don't understand. Like, when I started, there was the decision about whether or not to have environmental regulations as opposed to what degree. Mm-hmm. And he said that was a sea change. And so that's what you're seeing in older folks is they still support environmental stuff, at least according to the detailed information.
Mm-hmm.
But their personal desire to have money spent on it, that does diminish. So I think the bar still gets raised, but it is interesting that they find that, you know, once they get ready to, like, you know, their time on the planet is shortening, like, yeah, you know, we need to spend money on that anymore.
Yeah, that's right. All righty. Guy says that he was attacked. Have they confirmed that the guy's homeless? Because I don't want to say anything disparaging about the attacker.
They have not confirmed.
Okay. Cairo 7 has a story about a guy from Edmonds, well, actually from Somalia first, moved here to the United States because he wanted to live a good life. He wanted to feel safe here. He's living in Edmonds. And he says that for the longest time, he's felt safe until
Hassan Abukar is having trouble seeing out of his swollen eyes, talking, and frankly moving after a vicious attack that happened yards from his apartment in this parking lot. As the 4th of July ended, he says a man on the street asked him for cash and didn't like what Abukar gave him.
I just tried to give him dollar, but man, I said I was going to rob. Man, I want to give him another dollar too. So just come give me a loan.
Edmonds police say officers responded and arrested a suspect and confirmed to Cairo 7 that it happened in the area near the Pacific Park apartments. We searched through crime reports and found 9 assaults in the area since June 21st, although Abukar says he's never felt unsafe until now.
Man, this guy never seen before. I don't know him. He just sitting there. He have a lot of stuff. It's like a homeless guy.
Abukar kept the bloody shirt he used to stop the bleeding. He has a scratch on one eye, 5 stitches above the other, and swelling on both. He says he can't look for work as he tries to heal, and his sense of security is shattered.
I'm in America. I came here to get, you know, protect. I know I have a police, as a safety. If I know it's gonna, somebody gonna attack me like this, I never come here.
All right, I'll present the same offer as I have. I'm 2 for 2, by the way, Mike Lewis, on this. If the homeless guy turns out to be not from Seattle but has moved here in the last 2 years, I win $100. If the person is a resident of King County or was previously living in a house in King County and then became homeless, you win $100. It's now offered to anybody out there. By the way, when I win, I normally give the money back. So that's kind of just a friendly, fun thing. You can text at 98973 if you want to take me on the bet. Here's the bet. The guy that attacked the guy in Edmonds is from outside the state of Washington.
Okay. That's your bet.
That's it. 98973. Again, 2 for 2. And by the way, yesterday I gave blood, so be nice to me because I might be suffering from one pupil being larger than the other, severe headaches, decreased condition.
Is that what that crumpled up piece of paper is? I keep seeing, you keep glancing at it.
I just want to see if something's going wrong.
What did he bring in, like, some debris from the outside?
My donation sheet.
Oh, nice. And congratulations.
Post-donation instructions. And I'm just running through just to see. Unusual confusion or aggravation?
That's pretty much standard for you. But that means you probably give blood every day of the week.
You know, I do a bleed for this company. I bleed for this radio station.
Yeah, you
understand?
Yeah.
Sweat and blood. All right. If at any minute, if you notice that my one pupil is bigger than the other, Mike Lewis, will you say something?
I try not to look too deeply into your eyes. I know you see that as a form of aggression.
And then you see my ears
and then
go back.
Ears
my
go
ears
back.
Go back. Oh, my God. Like, oh, my God. And then I spit on you.
Exactly.
And I spit on you. Hey, this is a story that Mike feels is so important that we need to do it in the first segment. And it's the fact that I only read part of it, and then I felt sick to my stomach, that bicyclists, pro bikers, are ingesting each other's feces. And Mike insisted we do this story.
One, I don't know that I insisted on this. However, I do admit a certain affection for the story. We're rolling into one of my favorite sporting events of the year, Tour de France, which mm-hmm. I dig. I know a lot of people don't, but there is a big cycling community
by the way,
in town.
Tom loves it, too.
Tom loves it, too,
Tom
because
loves it too,
he's
yeah.
very Eurocentric.
Yes.
Right. And it appears, and it's the downside, of course, the sport is it's been pretty severely tainted by
what?
A lot of doping. I know what? This may come as
what?
A shock to you. Hold on a second here.
Go ahead.
It looks like the newest potential form of doping, other than the vast array of doping scandals that have happened, is now what's referred to as poop doping. And poop doping is actually getting a fecal transplant so your gut biome matches. Apparently, top flight cyclists have a particular type of bacteria in their guts that allows them to process food exceptionally well, pull mm-hmm. energy from it. And so cyclists have been experimenting with like grabbing that particular gut bacteria, transplanting, and one pro cyclist, a woman who's also a science researcher, did it in the States and said it was transformative,
mm-hmm.
how much better, how much more energy, how much harder she could bike after she did the fecal, and she did the fecal transplant at home.
Okay.
Yeah, so, which is not necessarily, I think, either pleasant, I'm guessing you probably need a friend to help.
Wasn't there a video made famous about 8 years ago of two women that were doing that as well?
No, I don't remember. Depending on what video channels you're looking at, I don't know necessarily.
Okay, I just
one.
Looked it up, and that's the first thing that came up.
Well, there you go.
All right, so by the way, can they test for it and determine if somebody's done it? I guess
absolutely not at this particular
right.
point, which is another thing that could make it very, very popular.
Got it. By the way, the stinking ship, the parking garage named one of the 10 coolest, world's coolest parking garages. Sinking ship is what they normally call it. It is the stinking ship. It's the parking lot that's shaped like a sinking ship.
Yeah, it's like a ship's prow. It's the one on the edge of Pioneer Square. If you've walked in Pioneer Square on Yesler, you've seen it, or you maybe have walked away from it. It isn't necessarily the most pleasant garage. I don't know if it's as bad as it used to be. I do know that, one, it's lousy to park in because it's so oddly shaped
mm-hmm.
and very narrow that
right.
it's hard to get your car in and out. And two, John has an excellent point here. It typically smells a lot of – what does it smell like, John?
Like urine.
Yep, there you go.
They must have a sign up front that says park here plus restrooms. It is the worst. And because the way the thing is designed and how the heat builds up and then comes flying out when you walk by. But I would say the nice thing about it is the history of it. So you've got the Columbia Tower right there, the tallest building west of the Mississippi. I mean the Smith Tower right there. And then they had another hotel that was right in front of it, where the parking garage is. And it was in a bad earthquake in 1941 or something, like somewhere in there. They then kept it open until about 1961. And they said, you know what, just knock this thing down. And when they knocked it down, people started to realize, hold on, wait a minute, wait. This is a beautiful, beautiful building. And look at the architecture and look at the beautiful brickwork. And they raised it anyway. But after raising it, that's when the Society for the Preservation of Historical Buildings in Seattle got its start. So it was really that building coming down that started an entire governmental agency that goes around and marks different buildings and or in different bridges
for preservation. Right.
For preservation.
Yeah.
So it was the fall of that one that started something to save other buildings. That's the little brief history on it. But other than that, man, that thing smells like an open sewer. Good for you.
It does smell like an open sewer. I'm glad it ended up on a top 10 list,
I suppose. It did, as the world's coolest. And then it came in fourth, world's stinkiest parking garage, but I find that to be interesting. Come on, everybody. Get out there and do your part. Hey, luxury tents are now the place to be. I camped for the first time last week.
Let's back up for a moment. This is more interesting than the glamping story out of New York.
Why?
You camped for the very... You had never camped before.
No. Would you consider staying on the third floor of the Four Seasons camping?
Well, I guess if you're
the lower floor, if you're
in the hallway, maybe.
No. Anything four and lower is not that nice.
Yeah. Well, no, I would. You've never camped before?
No.
Actually, maybe I shouldn't be so surprised about this.
Okay. And technically, didn't actually go to a campsite because I didn't want to be mixed in there with the hoi polloi.
Right.
So we stayed in a friend's backyard.
Where was the backyard in what town?
It was Medina.
So that doesn't qualify as camping, but that does qualify
you.
It was a tent.
No. It was Leavenworth. Yeah. Leavenworth.
Yeah, that's not camping.
Alrighty.
And neither was this. Did you see that? So the story we were talking about is out of New York.
Yes, I saw it.
On Governor's Island, they are now have allowed a company to set up these luxury tents so you can do what's referred to as glamping or glamorous camping. Did you actually look at the pictures of it?
Oh, beautiful.
It looked like the state fairgrounds.
Yeah.
It was terrible. I mean, like, why would you consider it? It was a kind of a denuded field with a bunch of white tents on it.
Beautiful tents, beautifully lit.
I can't believe that people would actually pay to do that.
Well, you're away from the city. It's something to do. You don't want to go to Jones Beach and have somebody step on your throat. So you end up going there.
Spending a ton of money to go to a pretty nondescript, flat, ugly island and pay a lot to stay in a white tent that isn't as nice as probably the place where you're living, if you can afford to stay in that tent.
$600? Is that what it is?
Something like that, yeah.
By the way, I got a text. A friend of mine writes in, who's the dude with the mustache in the studio? He looks like a character from a 70s television show.
Oh, yeah. They don't... Andrew usually takes me out of the camera frame, so this is probably the first time some have seen me.
Mm-hmm. You look like somebody
from... That'd be Jacob, the producer of this show.
Jacob, the producer, yeah. I wasn't even going to answer that. I just wanted to try to mock him as some other 70s television character. We'll come right back. You can see Jacob online right there on the screen as well. You can go to the Cairo Radio app, get that download and watch us, and then write in as to what character from the 70s does Jacob appear to be. We'll take that. Plus, also, believe it or not, we have other news, including the market shift. Guess what, everybody? If you're waiting for the prices of a Seattle home to come down, here we go.
We might actually get it down.
All right, write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. For some reason, Jacob is in the shot. I don't know why, but you can watch us on the Cairo Radio app, and people have written in. You look like this guy. You're too young to remember, but the show was called One Day at a Time with Bonnie Franklin and Ally Burtonelli. And you look like Schneider from One Day at a Time. Check that out. You go. You write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98.
Valerie Bertinelli's big breakout.
Oh, my God. Wow.
That was just before she met.
So into her.
Eddie Van Halen.
Phew. Wow, she cute in that show.
Yeah, she was cute.
Huh? Let's just listen to more of the music. It ended. Oh, too bad. Okay. That show was on the air from 1975 to 1984. Crazy.
You even did your TV voice for that.
No. I just brought in a little bit of, what's his name? Countdown the top.
Oh, Casey Kasem.
There you go. All right. If I have to say it, then it doesn't sound like him. But if you then know who I'm imitating, then it works.
Then it works.
You don't yell out, hey, this is Casey Kasem.
Right.
You do it. A market shift. Hey, everybody, here it comes. The law of supply and demand is in effect in the city of Seattle. More and more people putting their houses on the market. And as more inventory is available, all of a sudden the buyer is able to go, hang on. Let's take a look at this other house down the street and see if we've got a little bit of leverage and some movement and we don't have to pay $400 or $500 per square foot.
Yeah, it was a pretty interesting story in the Seattle Times. And it said they interviewed a realtor in Magnolia. And she said she'd been getting as many as 100 people at open houses, and her latest listing in Magnolia attracted 15 people, mm-hmm. And had been on the market for 2 weeks. The funny thing is, like, where it is now, I mean, houses are still selling pretty rapidly.
Yeah.
They're still selling. It's just not that crazy level of 100 people showing up on your lawn and outbidding each other, which really wasn't a realistic and sustainable market.
No.
The real estate companies had been complaining for a long time that the inventory was so – low that people were willing to bid on anything just to get into a house. But it looks like the people who just sat on their hands and waited are actually going to end up getting much, much better deals at this point.
Well, they say you can never catch a falling knife when it comes to the stock market. And the same occurs when it comes to housing. It's a herd mentality. So what you're sitting there thinking, hey, we're going to sell. Let's put our house on the market. Let's wait, right? Because they're selling. The one down the street sold for $1.4 million. If we hold out for another 6 months, it'll probably go up another 10%. Let's hold out. Well, now all of a sudden, it's flattened. So now what you might begin to see is more...
Everyone's rushing to sell.
Right, their inventory on the market. Like, let's get out now, sell, sell, sell. And you end up like Bonnie Franklin and Valerie Burton. And when Valerie had this new boyfriend.
And Jacob.
No, you end up, now all of a sudden you'll
have... As the boyfriend.
Those that want to get out will put the house on the market, which will drive prices down even faster.
Yes. It's apparently now it's a... the inventory jumped 43% in June from a year ago. The increase, condo inventory went up 73%.
Yeah.
You could see it from the building standpoint. You could also see it, and this is one of those weird instances where you're getting both a glut of apartments and a glut of housing, and they don't always necessarily go hand in glove. And so we're actually, and it's funny, while the city is finally addressing growth issues in Seattle and talking about upzoning and whatnot, it may be that we're actually turning the corner on that with all the extra inventory that actually went on the market.
Right.
Particularly the extra inventory of condominiums.
Way to go, free market. Congratulations. Popular population migration patterns in the U.S. cities and Americas are abandoning. Is California number one?
Well, Los Angeles is number one from an out-migration standpoint in the United States. But the population, here's the funny thing, if you look closely at the data, the population in Los Angeles actually went up. But people are moving away. It went up because there were so many childbirths in Los Angeles that the population actually increased over that time. But what you're finding now in a lot of major American cities is people are moving away out of the city to escape either high home prices or what they perceive as quality of life issues.
Or taxes, right?
Or taxes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, quality of life issues, a variety of things that people are fleeing. But they're not moving back to the net influx of rural to urban is still going on. What people are doing now is moving to the suburbs or what they refer to as the exurbs, right beyond the suburbs, you know, something like where you live. That is where people seem to be moving to get away from cities. And Los Angeles is on the list. Cleveland, Ohio, Detroit, of course, Chicago has had a massive exodus of people. In many ways, I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing.
No, I love the fact that people can move away from high-tax states like Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, and California and go to other places. I saw that Florida, a lot of people go to Florida, and you'll often hear liberals say, yeah, they're moving there for the sunshine, the palm trees. But then when you look, because the IRS now breaks it down by the age group, so then you see that of the age group, there's like 25 to 38-year-olds, 77,000 of those guys moved to Florida. And they're not there. They're not there to retire. And they always say, oh, they're just trying to get away from the weather. And I think there's just more to it than just the weather. And not everybody in Florida is retired. There's like six people that are not retired. And most of them were selling.
Do you know all
cars.
Of them? Can you name all of them?
I'm not good with names. I know one guy sounds like Doug. It might be different. Anyway, That's it. Get out of California. Get out of Connecticut.
Wait, get out of Illinois. Let's back up.
Yeah.
The data did not say California. The data said Los Angeles.
Oh.
So the people are moving out of Los Angeles. Other cities in California are still increasing. And it's not that the state is seeing a net out migration. The state is still seeing a net in migration.
But those are people being born there?
But they
didn't really have any
choice. No. That was Los Angeles. This is more on people moving out of cities than people moving out of states.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, there's a hand in glove thing there. But in California, you're not seeing a net statewide, a net out migration. You're not seeing that at all. But you are seeing it in Los Angeles. You are seeing it in Chicago. You are seeing it in Cleveland. You are seeing it in Detroit. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the state itself is seeing an out migration.
Okay.
However, it's completely understandable, and you're going to start seeing it in San Francisco, and you're going to start seeing it probably in Seattle at some point as these areas price their way out of young people being able to afford to live there. Now, you know, maybe we're turning a corner here in terms of house prices, but even if they level off, you know, it's leveling off at $700,000 median house price. That's prohibitive for anyone young and not making a ton of money. I can see why people would move to a cheaper state and trying to get, you know, get a leg up there if you move to an Arizona or you move to a Florida or you move to some other place like that.
The numbers I saw were that California, 5 million people moved out between 2007 and 2016. moved to other states from California, while 5 million people left California. On net, the state lost 1 million residents to domestic migration, a 2.5% historic low. So my point is always, if you force people out because of high price of houses, and included in that is taxes, and or the size of the government, or you feel like, gosh, can you imagine living in Detroit, right? Does Detroit even have any residents left? At one point, there were 2 million people lived there. They're down to 500 and some thousand.
No,
it's the weirdest.
They peaked almost about 3 million people. They dropped to, right now they're at 700,000. They're
700,000.
Smaller than Seattle. But the thing about Detroit that makes it seem even emptier.
Because it's so big.
It is 134 square miles. It's like three Bostons. It is a huge city in terms of geographic footprint. I was just there for a week and a half. It is amazing when you're going through neighborhoods that would be the equivalent in Seattle of let's just say, Wallingford, you know, a densely populated single-family home neighborhood right off downtown or near downtown. And you'll see blocks that are empty.
Is Hollywood
not just
still
empty, but empty of houses, like literally empty?
Well, the people were burning them down on Devil's Night, plus also just the cost of keeping them.
Yeah.
And I had also seen a couple of years
ago. The city raised
a
bunch, too, because they just felt like they were squatter houses and whatnot. We need to clear this stuff out. It was actually a pretty good idea on their part.
And then also, a couple of years ago, Hollywood used to go in there and buy up blocks and blow them up and set them on fire.
There was a lot of that. It became really a favorite for Hollywood because, one, it was cheap, and, two, you had completely depopulated industrial areas.
Sure,
in town,
you didn't have to worry about smoke or debris.
It was ideally made for your post-apocalyptic science fiction movie.
Exactly. Yeah, and Detroit used to advertise that. Come to our city and blow it up. All right. The mayor of London has said, yeah, it's okay. Let it fly. It's okay. It can hang around over the Parliament building for 2 hours or something like that because it's all about free speech.
It's all about free speech and big babies.
Big babies. We'll come right back. Michael Shoot Bingo, bringing you the know-it-all quiz, 11:34. You get a chance to get on the phone, to get on the air. That's right, you got to use your phone for talking to somebody, can't text us. And you get a chance to talk to Jacob first, and then Mike Lewis will speak to you, and I'll speak to you, and we'll welcome you with open arms. And then we will ask you five questions. The tone and tenor of everything we establish, we'll call it a friendship, will change suddenly with a minor chord, and then we will ask you five questions, the stories we covered all week. You got to get them right, including, by the way, 4th of July. So our 4th of July stories take up most of the quiz because we feel that you really weren't there. We're testing people to see how loyal they are to the show.
Yeah, we're testing you because we weren't even loyal to that show, and what we insist that you be.
Absolutely. All righty. The mayor of London can join a long list of other people that are outraged by Donald Trump. I think it was Trump that made some comments about Muslims and stuff, and it was 2017, and the mayor, what's his name, Mayor Khan?
Sadiq Khan.
Yeah, Sadiq Khan got really upset, and there's no love lost between these two. So an artist comes along and says, hey, I know Trump's coming to town, and he's going to be speaking in Parliament. I got this idea. I'd like to create a gigantic inflatable, you know, baby.
The president of the U.S. is a giant baby blimp because he acts like a baby. Basically, if anything happens that he doesn't like, his reaction is to throw his toys out of the pram.
You are fake news.
We are going to fly him, hopefully, on Parliament Square to make a statement to our government as well that we don't approve of their Trumpisms. Donald Trump, there's nothing that affects him. You can try to reason with him, he won't react, but the only thing that he really hates is being ridiculed, so that's what we're trying to do.
Okay, good luck.
Did you add in that background music?
Yes. No, I didn't. That was there.
Why?
Because that's what people do now to make things seem more fun. Or, hey, is this, you can tell
we don't
this
trust,
is funny by the music we use.
We don't trust your ability to react to this, so we're going to add an extra soundtrack just to let you know which way we need to steer you.
The president of the U.S. is a giant baby blimp because he acts like a baby. Basically, if anything happens that he doesn't like, his reaction is to throw his toys out of the pram.
We are mocking this.
We are going to fly him.
Okay. His reaction to the flying baby, diapered baby.
Trump's reaction
yes.
to it?
You think he'll say anything about it?
Oh, I don't know. Probably.
Well,
sad! Exclamation point.
Sad.
I guess that would be a part of what he will say.
They got my hair right. It looks pretty nice. The mayor of London was asked, you know, should he do it? He thought about it for a little while, and then he said, yeah, I think it's okay for the First Amendment.
They initially told
safely.
Them no.
Right, no at first, and then I think they said, okay, 2 hours, you can fly it around. So, of course, then there was a counter protest, and now they want to get an inflatable mayor.
Baby Khan
to fly also next to him. Now, they have raised the kingly sum of £10,000.
Right.
Which, when I talked to my friend Mike Dillon, by the way, Mike Dillon,
right here, oh, yeah, weird on. Stuff, right?
He builds stuff like this.
Oh, okay.
And you would need a heck of a lot more than £10,000 to build an inflatable baby con to fly next to him, unless you wanted just a tiny one.
Well, and then going through the permitting process as well. But I don't know. I'll be curious to see if Trump reacts. I'm really kind of shocked that he's actually going there, given how the strong sentiment against Trump. In London, in particular,
he says there's nothing wrong with that. We're great people. They're great people. We're great people.
Sad.